Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
March 12th, 2019. Thank you for joining me yet again. Today, there's always, as always, great things to talk about. Today, specifically, we have more Venezuela lies. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? We have more lies coming out about Venezuela from the United States government that we're going to go through. More information. For those that thought it couldn't get any worse, couldn't get any more embarrassing for them, it's going to. We have Guaido, the U.S.-backed puppet in Venezuela, now calling for intervention. The very thing he said that he promised Venezuelans that he wasn't going to do. He's already done it once. Now he's going to do it again, using the very constitution that they've already ignored. U.S. military airstrikes have killed 50 civilians, mostly women and children, in Syria while all this is going on. Not U.S. forces, but U.S. military planes killed 50 people, mostly women and children. And more insight on the U.S.-controlled Al-Rukban now internment camp and how it's gotten much, much worse, or at least now we're beginning to see how bad it's always been and how they're continuing to keep these 45,000+ Syrians trapped in this location controlled by the United States while they're starving and suffering, while they pretend to care about Venezuelans and everyone else around there. But first, to start today, a story that I found to be very revealing and added to the growing list of stories that we've already been talking about, that those that watch this channel already know what I'm about to tell you. But now it's coming out from, as I said the other day, straight from the horse's mouth. Again, this one coming directly from Netanyahu. This from antiwar.com first. Netanyahu sending money to Hamas, key to keeping Palestinians divided. Man, he is just coming out of the all over lately with exactly what we've been saying for a long time and openly saying it. And again, things that the Western media and the U.S. government have directly contradicted for a very long time. This is, and he doesn't outright say we created Hamas, which is also the case. But the reality is that they're openly now making it clear that we want to continue to fund Hamas to make sure that we keep the Palestinians divided. And that's, and this, again, now just for, again, for those who may think, oh, well, this is independent media. Here's from the Jerusalem Post saying the same thing. Netanyahu, money to Hamas, part of their strategy to keep the Palestinians divided. Now, why would you need a strategy to keep Palestinians divided if they were just another group that has every right, all the same rights as everybody else in Israel, and they're welcome to all say, no, this is an oppressed group that is being ethnically cleansed. And that's why they're trying to divide them so they can't be strong enough to fight back. I don't know. It's quite obvious to me. And we've been talking about this for some time, that not only did they create Hamas to use it for this exact purpose, but that they're funding and keeping it where it is so they can use them, just like the United States uses their proxy forces in Syria and everywhere else. It's a very interesting story. Now, Likud officials, the party, Netanyahu's party in Israel, are reporting that during a Monday meeting, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu argued in favor of continuing, not to fund, but continuing to fund Hamas, arguing that it's the best way, of course, to keep Palestinians divided. Now, the author rightly notes this seems to fall neatly into the category of Israeli policies that have fairly obviously been in place, as we all know, but which officials don't publicly talk about until now, which is, remember, Netanyahu just the other day made very clear when a star was trying to defend him that, no, you misunderstand. Israel's only for Jewish people. He made that very clear. Now, with the election looming, which is an important point, Netanyahu is increasingly being frank, completely open about his efforts to undercut Palestinian statehood and his conviction that Israel, as I said, is not a state for all people, but only for Jews. If any other person anywhere else said that, oh, that's racist. But if Israel says it, no, that's okay. Because they're the protected ally of the United States that gets away with whatever they want, including killing people with impunity. And again, this isn't about Jewish people. It's about government actions and the crimes they're committing and how very clearly they're actually happening. That those that just don't want to see it. Now, this is something, the idea of creating Hamas as well is important to understand. This is also a fact. Things may have changed since then, but even the Business Insider did a great article a long time ago pointing very clearly that the Israeli government had ties to the very creation of Hamas and using them just like they are so they can go bomb an entire village of Palestinians and say, oh, well, Hamas is bad and they were there, so it's all good, even though they created Hamas and they're using it for that purpose. And by the way, this is from the Times of Israel. And again, this is not a secret anyway. This is not a secret. It's only a secret to those who only watch mainstream media and blindly listen to what their government tells them. They're wildly open about this, as that video I always show from the Member of Parliament from Ireland reading their statements very clearly shows. They despise these people, and that's why they treat them like second-class citizens. Now, Palestinian division is not something, you know, dividing Palestinians is not something Israel just kind of sort of favors, but is something that's been, it's been pursued as formal policy for decades. And yet the U.S. continues to pretend that's not the case. Now, the early groundwork in founding Hamas was, of course, heavily laid by Israel themselves, with an eye toward splitting the Palestinians along secularist and Islamist lines, creating, funding, and using this group in order to keep this group divided, the group that they're trying to ethnically cleanse. Now, this is a major reason why every international attempt at Palestinian unity, and talk of Hamas, Fatah, rapprochement with free elections in the occupied territories is met with Israeli opposition. It's not, as officials would claim, that Hamas is just untrustworthy. Rather, it's that if Hamas is part of a united Palestine, which they won't because they're being funded and was created by Israel, they aren't doing the job Israel created them for, which is to divide and be the excuse used whenever they want to use them. And, you know, again, just as Israel creates an enemy to fight, you know, in order to use that fake enemy as a scapegoat for all of its many war crimes and human rights violations, so too does the United States government create, well, anything in order to progress its agenda. Create fake enemies to use as excuses to invade nations, create fake events to demonize the opposition, even create utterly fabricated news stories. Who would have thought? Foreign and domestic, in order to sway opinion. This is indeed the age of propaganda that we are in. And there is no better example of this than the attempted U.S. coup in Venezuela that we're all watching on full display. And luckily for us, this time, the almost comical failure of that propaganda. Now, as Pompeo recently asked, what kind of sick tyrants don't let aid get through? Well, of course, you know, dishonestly insinuating that no other aid is getting into Venezuela, despite how absurdly obvious it is to prove him wrong in that regard. But I wanted to share an excellent comment by one of my many fantastic followers out there that was left in response to Pompeo specifically saying this. Now, as always, I don't want to give the shout out for the name. I don't know, maybe they don't want their name to be out there. But this is an excellent comment by one of our commenters in the YouTube comment section after the show where I discussed Pompeo saying this. And I made one of these points actually in a recent show, but they really put together all of the points. And I wanted to make sure I read this because they're asking what kind of tyrant doesn't let aid get through, even though we know that it is anyway. But let's just pretend that he means that and it is true. And the person comments, what kind of sick tyrants don't let aid get through? Oh, maybe, you know, Bush and Obama, when Chavez wanted to give aid to the U.S. hurricane victims, which I talked about in a recent show, which is the fact. And they just said no. He says maybe Israel, when it arrests and kills flotillas headed to Palestine. Oh, that's a great example. Says maybe Trump, who won't let the UN or other NGOs get aid to Yemen. Oh, that's a great example. He says Trump again, when he won't let Syrian refugees return to Syria to get aid, like the people locked in the Al-Rukban camp right now. Trump again, who won't let migrants who need aid into the U.S., or Obama again, who separated migrant families and locked kids in cages, or Clinton, whose sanctions genocided Iraqi children that Madeleine Albright said was worth it, or the Clintons again, who used aid in Haiti for sex trafficking and on, which may, people may disagree with some of his points, but the reality is how absurd it is for someone like Pompeo to stand there and pretend that he's, how, what kind of tyrant won't let aid, you guys. On a regular basis all around the world right now in countless locations. And as this just casual comment very clearly points out, again, how just for every show that we do, it's just so important to recognize how easy this stuff is to see if you just take a moment to remove yourself from the bubble that they're all in. The hypocrisy of this kind of thing is overwhelming. And it seems it is only about to get much worse, actually. Or maybe, you know, coming to an end. Based on this next tweet, many think it could actually mean either or. And here's for one of the stories that it actually came out yesterday. I talked about it this morning. I was on Fault Lines Radio this morning. And we talked about this, where Pompeo tweeted out, the U.S. will withdraw all remaining personnel from the embassies this week in Venezuela. This decision reflects the deteriorating situation in Venezuela, as well as the conclusion that the presence of U.S. diplomatic staff at the embassy has become a constraint on U.S. policy. How interesting. So first of all, they denied it. They say, we're not removing them because Guaido's the real leader and he's there, so we don't have to. So this directly contradicts their previous stance, and nothing has changed except that their situation's gotten worse. So this could either suggest military intervention is very near and they want to get them out of the way, you know, which some people think that some people would suggest that this does mean that. But then others might mean that it suggests the opposite. But as someone also pointed out, just your casual midnight Monday post from Mike Pompeo, you might really 11:50 p.m. You just kind of wonder if maybe he didn't want anybody to see it. You know, maybe, but you know, just a thought. But the reality is they're moving them out of the way, which does signal a change. And it's important for us to see what, you know, and based on their previous actions, what this might mean. Now, the deteriorating situation in Venezuela is important to also point out that the situation in Venezuela is worse than it was before. But let's think of what's the catalyst in all of this, right? What's the usual suspect here that once the U.S. got involved, things got dramatically worse? That's an interesting thing to think about. And what, you know, that doesn't mean that Maduro didn't play a part in that, which I think it's very small, in my opinion, in regard to what we're looking at right now. But we know that the U.S. getting involved made this worse. Now, in response to this, which I thought was interesting, and this is another thing I thought people need to consider, that it, all of a sudden now, instead of doing it back when Venezuela first asked them to, as one producer pointed out, Venezuela's foreign ministry informed the diplomatic representatives of the United States, James Story, that the U.S. was no longer welcome in Venezuela on Monday afternoon. Just hours later, Pompeo announced that they were withdrawing, though he made it seem like the U.S. made the decision, of course, because that's what they do. It's about saving face. It's about propaganda. It's about presenting what you want people to think, not simply just telling people the truth. The truth rarely plays a factor in all of this. Now, of course, again, breaking his original promise to Venezuelans that the U.S. would never militarily intervene, Guaido also told Fox News right at this same time point on Monday that he plans to invoke Venezuela's constitutional Article 187, which he claimed, quote, allows for an outside country to cooperate or to assist Venezuela on the scene. Thank you for the super chat. Let me just read that again. Guaido told Fox News on Monday that he plans to invoke their constitution. As a random person who declared himself president somehow just thinks that he can just cite the constitution and use this to claimed, quote, allows for an outside country to cooperate or to assist Venezuelans in this sense, which is incredibly broad. And I'm sure when you read the actual verbiage, I guarantee you it has nothing to do with military intervention. It probably has to do with some kind of crisis, which is how they're trying to frame this. So again, what do these two actions mean together? Pompeo's diplomats being removed and Guaido saying they're now calling for intervention. What do they mean together? Again, some would say it means intervention is clearly coming. Some feel this is a sign of outright retreat and that Guaido is just trying to make, you know, splashes to get something going. But I mean, who ultimately knows? It's important for you to make your own decision based on this. But the reality is they cited, I think it was 233 in the Constitution of Venezuela to randomly declare Guaido president. And they were supposed to initiate elections within 30 days. And they just chose to ignore that. So they pick and choose when to use things like this as it relates to their agenda. And this isn't a biased opinion. This is the simple fact of the case that they did not follow through with what they said they were going to do and just said, we don't care anymore. That has to be relevant to the larger discussion and the further actions that they continue to take. Now, the next article coming from the anti-media is this exact topic. Guaido signals foreign intervention in Venezuela as U.S. withdraws diplomats. He says, quote, as we've stated in this article of our Constitution, which empowers me, you know, as the person in charge, to employ whatever measures are necessary to enact this cooperation and this assistance for Venezuela. See, it's assistance. I highly doubt an invading force overthrowing the government is considered assistance for Venezuela, but that's how they're interpreting it. But I find it very funny the way this is Guaido's statement. As we've stated in our article of our Constitution, which empowers me, you know, as the person in charge, to employ whatever measures. It's just funny. Maybe that's just me. You know, but it seems like this is Guaido standing up and saying, you know, to empowers me, I'm in charge. I'm the one. Everybody look at me. Everybody do what I'm saying. Like, it's very clearly trying. You don't need to say you're in charge. If you're in charge, people know you're in charge. And again, it shows you their weakening position At least that's my take on his little statement there. And he told this to Fox anchor Trish Regan. Now, the most recent U.S. effort, of course, came in the form of the power outage, which we've talked about over the last so many days, an effort they have used numerous times in the past against numerous countries. We just recently talked about the Nitrous Zeus virus they were planning to use for Iran that could very easily have been used on Venezuela. And the point is they have done this, and their own documentation shows that they've outlined exploiting exactly this kind of case, taking a case that might actually have a weakening infrastructure, you know, kind of like the U.S. does right now, and exploiting that and using the Nitro Zeus type of virus to stop them from being able to fight back and restore the power. Funny, that's exactly what it seems like is happening and exactly what Venezuela said happened from the beginning. Now, this has led the U.S., of course, to accuse Maduro of failing to run his country effectively. Of course, that's the go-to excuse. The same reason they immediately said that he burnt the trucks, and we now know that's fake. Now, despite, of course, abundant evidence that shows the U.S. was involved in this, and at the very least, restricted Maduro's ability to restore power. And even amid reports in the New York Times that the sanctions the U.S. has imposed in recent weeks are actually to blame for the blackouts, as Venezuela's access to fuel for power plants operations were cut off. Now, it's staggering to me that this is now the second time that we're seeing something like this. This is just remarkable to me. As I just reported yesterday, the New York Times just up and decided to cover what the independent media had been exposing since day one. So they didn't really do anything worth note. The New York Times just finally got on board with something that was very obvious, which I always call is basically damage control. But just the other day, they called out this lie that we all knew. That the fact that Maduro did not set these aid trucks on fire, but it was U.S.-backed opposition that was responsible. And now we have them here, again, standing up in an article that's actually not very extremely new, but it says in their article very clearly that U.S. sanctions are responsible for the blackouts. So why is this not extremely big news? Something we should be asking ourselves. It's just humorous. Now, someone I've referenced numerous times in regard to Venezuela specifically, Mark Weisenbrot, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, remarked on the reporting about Venezuela from the New York Times. And this is actually where I first saw it, where he says in his tweet, "This is amazing." buried deep in this New York Times article is a sentence indicating the Trump economic sanctions are a major cause of the deadly blackout in Venezuela, contradicting the rest of the article, which is also humorous. No one has noticed. This should have been the main story. Should have been, absolutely. But that's, of course, because the mainstream media doesn't do what they're supposed to do. Or rather, they do what they're supposed to do, and that's propagandize and deceive you. They don't do what journalists are supposed to do. Now, in case you just think maybe he's wrong about this, here's literally the article and the paragraph that we're talking about. "The blackout will further depress Venezuela's already collapsing economy." Of course, collapsing because of the sanctions, which Alfred de Zayas, the expert from the United Nations, also said was the case. Because of the sanctions is why they're having a problem in their economy. But he goes on to say, "which is being squeezed by bad governance, graft, and sanctions imposed by the United States." That right there is more than the U.S. would ever admit. Then it goes on to say, and this is the part he meant, "the sanctions have affected Venezuela's ability to import and produce the fuel required by the thermal power plants that could have backed up the Guri plant once it failed." I mean, really think about what they're saying there, that these sanctions are a major factor in why this all happened. Now, that doesn't mean there's not more to the story, that the reason that they weren't able to take other measures to bring it back on, the reason it lasted 5 days, there was clearly an effort here. Again, because Rubio tweeted about this 3 minutes after it happened. No one on the ground even knew what happened yet. They were involved. That's very clear. And it's also very clear that the sanctions are why they had this problem to begin with. So now we're talking about the U.S. being responsible for why they're in this situation to begin with, despite they continue to blame Maduro for the infrastructure and the problems. And then we also know the U.S. is involved in keeping the problem the way it is, which has been the result of people dying, or at least that's their claim. And so with all this information coming out, it needs to be very alarming to us that they continue to try to use the people that are suffering in this to support their agenda, while all this information makes it as abundantly clear that they're not innocent of all of this. And that is just sociopathic. Now, the idea that their sanctions are involved in this, and that the fact that the New York Times wrote this, I mean, this is a meaningful thing to not talk about, not to not discuss. Weizenbrot talked about this. He says, because it is part of a continuing push from U.S. media to downplay the role of an American American sanctions in Venezuela's current instability when they mention it at all, which I can't think of one example where I've seen the mainstream media discuss sanctions or talk about their real effect. He goes on to say, some people are questioning why this is important. In fact, it is part of a much larger omission by the media of enormous destructive impact of U.S. sanctions that have been in place before the Guaido trade embargo. Again, important to recognize that well before this whole recent event of the coup, the U.S. sanctions and actions have been destroying the Venezuelan economy intentionally, as they're meant to. Now, he goes on to say, make no mistake about it. This is Weizenbrot. U.S. sanctions on Venezuela are killing people and have been killing people for some time. I mean, you just can't misunderstand that. And just how, I don't know how many people we need to continue to hear from that are recognizably the experts such as Desaias or a well-respected person in their field that in other, if they were to be saying the thing that aligned with the U.S. government, they would be heralded as the expert we should all be listening to. They're everywhere. And I know you watching this show, you're likely aware of all this and you're waking up to this because it's hard. Like I always say, it takes some aggressive effort to not see this for what it is. To those watching this, if you're just casually stopping by, hopefully you already woke up to the reality of the situation. Now, I just talked yesterday about Mark Rubio's ridiculous tweet about another transformer explosion at the German dam in the Bolivar state. And how embarrassing this is for him to tweet about the German dam and showing you the reality being that it wasn't a German dam. It was the man's name, Hermann Dam, who tweeted the story. You see? And Marco Rubio deleted the tweet, obviously, because it made him look really, really stupid. And it also showed you that he didn't check anything. He didn't care to look into it. He just saw it and said, well, that works with what I'm trying to do. Here's the story. As a senator of the United States government and puts this out as fact without even checking it. It's just ridiculous. Now, as amusing as Rubio's mistake was, saying that they attacked a German dam when it's actually Hermann Dam, the journalist, who put the story out, it makes very clear another more important issue, or rather equally important, that the American foreign policy establishment is using the blackout to take aim at Venezuela and creating it, for that matter, no matter how they have to spin or obfuscate the facts around the power outage, which is exactly what Marco Rubio's ridiculous tweet shows us. They don't care what it is. They'll use it. Just like the mainstream media will use anything if it's negative against Russians, such as the Skripal case or such as the Poroshenko case in Ukraine, where the man faked his own death and everyone in the mainstream media said, Russia did it. And then he stood up and said, oh, I was just kidding. I'm not really dead. They don't care. They don't do the research. I don't know how many examples we need before we begin to at least say, I shouldn't just blindly trust what the mainstream media says. It's interesting. It's important to think about. Now, on to other terrible things happening in the world as the U.S. pretends to be the moral authority. This coming from anti-media about Syria. Now, I'm, kind of being slightly facetious when I say something like that, but the reality is that there are a lot of bad things happening at the hands of the U.S. government around the world. And it continues to get ignored while they point to other countries, and in many cases, as we've seen repeatedly, things that they themselves make up. And their actions that are much, much worse get completely ignored. And this is a big one for me because this is not just U.S. forces in Syria. This is U.S. military planes strike at least and kill at least 50 people, mostly civilians in eastern Syria. Now, didn't this used to be a story when 50 random people just die because of an aggressive regime change war that has nothing to do with helping anybody? But we've become so desensitized to the fact that people just die all the time. And they're there illegally. The whole premise for this war is illegal. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard is right now openly speaking about the fact that they just armed, or that they armed extremists. Not moderate rebels, but that they armed terrorists. I mean, we know this. You know this if you're watching this show. But this stuff is becoming, we're forcing this into the mainstream. And yet we still don't talk about this kind of stuff. And it's important that we do, that we force it into the mainstream, what's still happening. Now, this is just on Monday, just yesterday, U.S. warplanes attacked Baghouz, the area in Syria, killing at least 50 people. Details on what the intended target was is unclear, but the report suggests the dead were mostly women and children. Now, the attack came after the latest deadline set by the SDF for ISIS to surrender in the area, and that passed on Sunday. But with many thousands individuals, civilians, having left the village in the past few days because of this, the SDF seemed fine, kind of just expanding the deadline and getting more civilians out. Because that's what you try to do when you care about humanity, is let the civilians leave. But in the past few months, specifically more than usual, U.S. airstrikes backing the SDF offensive on the ground, the SDF being the Syrian Democratic Forces, about 60% Kurdish forces, but completely U.S.-backed forces. But the U.S. airstrikes backing their offensive have killed hundreds, if not thousands, of civilians on the ground. Civilian people that were pointing at Venezuela saying, oh, we care about people, while the U.S. is killing people in Yemen, in Syria, all over the place. Now, with thousands of civilians still believed to be in Baghouz, the U.S. strikes are undermining the SDF's effort, if it's really genuine, to convince them to leave, by showing that those who were trying to leave may be targeted by U.S. warplanes. It kind of gets puts a new light on the whole Saudi double tap strike happening in Yemen. Maybe there's more to it. Just bombing civilians for trying to flee the areas. Maybe it's because of what they know. Maybe they know something they don't want to get out from this area, which we've seen happen before. But the sad reality of all the speculation we could do is that the fact is U.S. airstrikes killed 50 civilians. And the mainstream media didn't tell you a peep about it. Like, add it to the pile. Now on to the last story of the day. And this is, well, technically second to last, but the last big story of the day, also about Syria. And it's something that we've continued to follow up on in regard to the Al-Rukban camp in Syria. This from South Front, entitled Fresh Satellite Images Reveal Now Up to 700 Graves. Chaos in U.S.-controlled Rukban refugee camp. Now, last ones they had were about 300 graves that they could find, the images that they showed. But now we're seeing these images, and it's getting increasingly bad. Now, these are all in the show notes you can look at. If you're not going to get a good enough look here, they're small on the screen. But as you go through these, you can see 70 graves there, 150 graves there, 20 graves everywhere. Now, yes, some people will die. But the reality is that the information they're releasing is that this situation here is very dire. Now, it's being reported, actually, that the people stranded in the Rukban refugee camp, and it's clearly an internment camp if these people are not being allowed to leave, as we do know, that and it's a U.S.-controlled camp in eastern Syria, that these people get less than 5 liters of water per person per day for everything, right? Washing, drinking, everything. Now, this is barely enough for cooking and drinking and insufficient for proper personal hygiene. So these people are basically just festering in this camp, bad hygiene, not enough water, not enough food. And the U.S. pretend they care about this kind of thing in other places. They're literally running an internment camp. And it says, quote, behind the camp's walls are reservoirs with a volume of 210 cubic meters, into which water brought from Jordan is filled and then distributed among the camp's residents. Simple calculations show that each resident can receive no more than 5 liters of water per day. That is not only barely enough for cooking and drinking, but also insufficient for washing and doing laundry, which leads to highly unsanitary conditions. Pretty obvious. And this is, of course, exactly the same kind of thing that they would attack if it was being done by an adversary. If this exact same thing was happening in a adversary in Iran, let's say. Oh my God, it would be the biggest story of the day. How dare they keep 45,000 people locked in a camp? I mean, how is that not big enough for everyone to care about? 45,000 individuals are locked, more are being trapped and kept in this camp when they want to leave by the U.S. government. How does that align with what they pretend to be around the world? They pretend they're helping these people, but they don't want to be there. They're openly saying, we want to go here, we want to go there, we want to go back to government-controlled areas. They're on the record. And the U.S. just says, no, because you're our prisoners. And the story actually gets worse from there. Now, according to the statement, members of the U.S.-backed Maghwir al-Thawra, a militant group, if I'm saying that correctly, that operates in the area. Another militant group supported by the U.S. that's working in this area. Interestingly, the terrorists that Tulsi Gabbard is openly saying that they have and are arming in Syria, that according to the statement, members of this terrorist group disrupt water deliveries to the camp, criminally using it as a bargaining chip for blackmailing and profiteering, which means they say, oh yeah, you want some water? Here's some more graves for you to look at. Massive grave sites all over this. You want some water? Yeah, well here, you have to sleep with my friend. Here, you have to give us all of your food or your jewelry. I mean, Donald Trump's talking about how much they care about coyotes abusing women across the border. Well, this is literally what we're talking about right here. People that are getting, that are sexually abusing people based on favors just so they can have enough water to drink. Happens all over the world. Happens largely in groups like the UN peacekeepers. It happens all the time. People abusing their position. But the problem with this situation is we're talking about terrorist groups that are supported by the U.S. that are just running amok within the U.S. camp. I mean, we're talking about an area controlled by the U.S., by U.S. forces. Well, the statement also recalled that burial sites and garbage dumps that dot the area that you've seen in these images close to housing locations are worsening the already dire humanitarian situation in the camp. So piling bodies and trash dumps that are directly next to their housing is getting worse and worse. Now, mind you, nothing of these reports has been denied by the United States. They're just ignoring this entire story because, of course, the Western media won't touch it. Now, the Russian and Syrian Joint Coordination Committees have also addressed the shortage of food. The shortage of food. Again, just the idea, how hypocritical the starving people here, while they're pretending to care about starving people in Venezuela, they're arguably much, much better off than what's happening in this camp, or in Yemen, for that matter. But they address the shortage of food, warm clothing, and medication, in addition to the poor sanitary and epidemiological situation. Now, according to the statement, refugees suffer from exhaustion, acute intestinal diseases, and infections. And this is in the U.S. camp. This is their people being held there, locked in this camp, and they're dying, have diseases and infections, and they're starving, and they're dying of thirst. I mean, it's just disgusting that this is what's, and this is, remember, being done with your tax dollars if you're an American. So that means that we're complicit. We're part of this because we're paying for it. Now, despite this, the U.S.-led coalition and its proxies continue to this very moment to prevent the evacuation of these refugees from the camp. Ask yourself why that would be. I mean, there's no logical reason to allow people to continue to suffer unless it's to progress your agenda, which is what they're doing. Now, for the final story of the day, and really just a quick note to end here, as all of this stuff continues to get more and more intense in regard to what's going on around the world or censorship and control in our own country, it's important to recognize that as much as we get distracted by a story like Venezuela, and I wouldn't call it distracted, it's clearly important. But while we focus our attention here, we fail to recognize that the same things are continuing here on the ground in regard to censorship of independent media. And it is indeed happening. For those that may not have already heard, Facebook has now just banned all of Zero Hedge. And of course, they don't even know why. They can't get an answer. There's no justification. It just simply says they just deleted their account. So it's important for us to recognize that they are pushing the agenda forward. And the reason they're doing stuff like this is because Zero Hedge reaches people. And they can't have that. So more than ever today, it's incredibly important to get out there and support your independent media. Get out there and support Zero Hedge. Get out there and support anti-media. Anti-media is a shell of what it once was because they were deleted from Facebook and everywhere else. It upsets me. I had a great interview with Carrie Wedler not too long ago. And anti-media is still and could be one of the best independent media outlets out there if they would be allowed to function like it once did. But the problem is they can't even pay any of their people anymore because they took away their revenue stream. And that's the point. These things are going to continue to happen. So it's never been more important to get out there and support your independent media. Support the truth in any way you can find it. And not just one, but as many as possible. And by support, I simply just mean go there, watch the channels, participate. And if you deem it necessary, feel free to donate to anybody you want. But the support that really matters is sharing the link, getting the information out there and waking people up every single day. Now, if you'd like to support this channel, there's many ways you can do it. All the links in the show notes. If you'd like to buy a t-shirt, you can do so from Truth Clothing. That link is also in the show notes. There's our Question Everything t-shirt and the sticker there you can see. I'm actually wearing the End the Fed shirt today. If you'd like to buy anything else from that website, make sure you add Vagabond in the code so it helps out my channel. But really, like I said, just supporting this channel by being here is what really matters. Growing the numbers, getting it out there, getting it in front of people. Because as I continue to point out, we are making a difference, and that's why they're attacking us. Thank you for being here. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.